Jeff Stelling, former host of Countdown, is best known for bringing us all the football action on a Saturday without actually showing a football pitch. One of the original panellists with Jeff on Sky Soccer Saturday was our own George Best. He says George's death left the entire team shattered. The success of the programme has surprised many, not least Jeff himself. He's been telling me why he thinks it works.
It is unusual, and how it works is a mystery to many people, myself included. And basically, it's four grown men watching football matches and telling you what you can see. I always describe it as a football show with no football, no goals, no shots, no near misses. But it does have, we hope, a lot of entertainment and a lot of excitement. And basically, that excitement is, you know, passed on to the viewer by our gang of four, Matt Letizia, Paul Merson, Charlie Nicholas and Phil Thompson.
Because it breaks all the rules of television, a few ex-players sitting watching screens that the viewers can't see.
Yeah, I know. Almost adds to the drama, though, you know, because people who are watching tell me, you know, they hear a, you know, a strangled cry in the background and they're not quite sure who it's come from. They're not quite sure which game it involves, you know, so they're on the edges of their seats because it could be their team. So it just gives a moment or two of a dramatic pause, just builds the tension a little.
When it comes to excitement, was there anything to top the way last season ended?
It was
phenomenal. And I must say, I missed the first half, Jeff, because I was working, but I came home and in the second half, I spent the time flicking between Man City, Sunderland and your show.
Yeah, it was just, well, there'll never be another day like it, will there, you know? Sir Alex, off the bench there, telling his team at Sunderland to get ready for their victory parade, and then Sergio Aguero, you know, it was absolutely, absolutely fantastic. So, you know, Martin Tyler's commentary on the City game will live in my mind for a long time, and so will Paul Merson's comments at the end of the game on Soccer Saturday, by the way, when Aguero scored and every Manchester City player and the coaching staff all piled on top of him, and he said they're giving him love bites a lot.
I think we can actually listen to the clip and how you covered that, Jeff.
Oh, same position against Silva, whips it in.
The second away from the title, their 20th title, their sixth in seven seasons. Wayne Rooney got the
other
dog in his 34th.
That is just fantastic. I've got goosebumps, Jeff.
Yeah, nicely understated, wasn't it? The great thing about Merce is for somebody who has trouble getting to grips with the language, he manages to describe things so vividly. You know, I don't know how he does it.
Does it ever get stale? Because you've been doing it since the 90s.
Well, I guess the viewers will tell you if it gets stale. For me, it doesn't, you know, because Saturday is always the best day of the week. Well, actually, there are two great days of the week, Saturday and Sunday, because my two sons both play football for local teams on Sundays, so I love going and watching them. You know, I'm a real bore. I never get tired of football either.
Are men, and indeed women, just overgrown kids when it comes to football then?
Yeah, well, they are. That's right. I tell you what, that's one of the great things about football. I've been watching it since the 60s, and my sister took me to my first football match. And I can tell you now that she would be one of maybe a dozen women in the crowd. But that's changed completely now, because you go to any match now and, you know, there are almost as many women as men, which is exactly how it should be. It's much more of a family game than it used to be, which is, I think, one of the real positives that's developed over the last few years.
Well, one of the original panellists over the years on Soccer Saturday was our own George Best. He was a bit special to the show, you said.
Well, you know, George, for me, was the greatest footballer I ever saw. You know, of course, there are fantastic footballers these days, but George had just something different about him. And I remember, you know, as a kid watching him. And for me, you know, it was a council house boy who couldn't play football. I mean, I was a Sunday morning footballer. You know, to find myself on Saturdays sitting next to George Best was just something that I could never have dreamt about. You know, and George was so kind and so understated and you know, he never really believed or never really understood how good he was, you know. Or if he did, he certainly wasn't boasting about it. And he was just a lovely character. And quite a lot of the time in the show, you know, George didn't say too much. He wasn't too outspoken. But when he did, you know, it was always relevant. It always counted. It was, you know, always thoughtful, always articulate. And he's just wonderful. Part of a wonderful double act was Rodney Marsh, by the way, as well. But, you know, I mean, the day that George died was probably the most, well, unquestionably, the most shattering day we've had on the show. And, you know, because we all thought he was invincible. We all thought that George would last forever, but, you know, sadly he didn't.
You did expect, everybody did expect him to pull through then, even though he was very ill.
Yes, because, you know, he'd been ill so many times before. He'd been to the brink so many times before that you always thought that a miracle would happen. And, you know, although I knew how seriously ill he was, and all the boys did as well, I don't think reality only struck home when we heard the news.
Was he frustrating to work with at times, though? Because you said that Soccer Saturday was the only show with a subs bench in case George didn't weigh in.
Yeah, that's right. We used to bring an extra body into the office, a fifth pundit, just in case George didn't turn up. And, you know, we did everything to ensure that he did turn up. We made sure that, you know, his wife put him in a cab with instructions of where to go. But then, you know, George en route would say, you know, never mind going there just yet, I'm early, let's go to the Feeney Arms instead. So we start to send our own drivers, you know, and that didn't always work either. George would be elsewhere. But he was George Best, you know. Nobody else could get away with that. But I know that my then boss at Sky Sports, the managing director of Sky Sports, Vic Wakeling, had promised George a job for life, and he stuck to that promise. And, you know, as time went on, George became more reliable, more consistent. You know, Soccer Saturday became a bigger part of his life. Although I will tell you one day, I remember George, he'd flown in from Manchester. He'd been at a dinner the night before, and got a nice, bright, early flight. And he was in our office at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, 3 hours ahead of the show, quite bright and breezy. And we all thought, this is great because George is here. No need to worry today. And about 11:30, we all trooped into makeup, George included. And four of us walked out of makeup, and we turned right. And what we didn't know at the time was George had turned left and walked out of the building. And as we sat there at 11:55 ready to go on the air, there was no George. And it transpired that he just decided he didn't feel like it that day. So we'd gone right and into the studio. He'd gone left and into the local rugby club and had a pint or two and then went home.
And did he watch the show in the local rugby club?
I don't know. It was the sort of thing that we didn't talk about too much, you know. If George wasn't there, then, you know, it was for his own good reasons. And yeah, we were always tolerant of that.
If we move on to your new book, Jeff and Ori, in it you talk about your 3 years presenting Countdown. And yes, it was emotional when you left, even a few tears.
Yes, I mean, thankfully, mainly from Rachel Riley, not so much from me. You know, I had a fantastic time at Countdown because it was something that I'd never, you know, dreamt about doing before, a game show, effectively. And I remember, you know, my agent rang me, and I was on a beach in Portugal at the time, and he said, how do you fancy presenting Countdown? And I just laughed at his face, really. But it turned out that the show's producer was a huge football fan, a huge Blackpool fan, in actual fact, and watched Soccer Saturday religiously. And he'd managed to persuade the powers that be that I would be, you know, the perfect host of the show and the perfect partner for Rachel Riley. So, yeah, so, we, you know, Rachel and I started together and we had a bit of a bond and, you know, got on extremely well. And Susie Dent and all the backroom crew as well. So, yeah, it was a sad day when it came to leaving.
Why did it? Because it could have given you a whole new career on television.
Yeah, but, you know, if I was honest, Lisa, my first love's football and sport in general. But I was spending a lot of time away from home. Now, you know, I know a lot of people do. I mean, I look at Eamon Holmes in astonishment because I can't imagine how he can manage to juggle so many jobs, you know, and spend any time at home at all.
And still get up to Old Trafford for the home games.
Well, that's right, you know. But I was missing home, you know. My family are pretty young. I mean, my boys are, you know, just 14 and 12. My little girl's 9. I was missing them growing up a bit because with that, Soccer Saturday and Champions League, which had, you know, by then been, you know, given by Sky Sports, I was just spending a heck of a lot of time away from home. And that suits a lot of people. And they're all fantastic jobs, and I was grateful to have them all. But I just wanted to cut back a bit, you know, so that when I was home, I wasn't tired and grouchy and shouting at the kids, you know. It's not how it should be.
There's a great quote in the book that you say, given the choice between Les Dennis in Dictionary Corner on Countdown or being in Milan covering the Champions League, there was only going to be one winner.
Yeah, there certainly was. That was, you know, mind you, I will say, you know, Les, he only appeared once on Countdown in my time there, but he was fantastic company, you know, so... You know, I'm not using Les as an example for any particular reason. I could have picked out absolutely anybody, you know.
Respect to Les is
respect
what you're saying.
Les, he was absolutely, absolutely brilliant, you know. But, I mean, my first Champions League game, the first one that I was given, and it was a bit of a last-minute job, was Milan against Tottenham, you know, in the San Siro. And I went over there, and it was a stormy sort of Wagnerian night, and... the San Siro was absolutely packed and everybody expected that Milan would batter Tottenham. And instead, you know, Tottenham gave a virtuoso performance. Peter Crouch scored near the end. And on the final whistle, Jamie Redknapp was with us and his dad, who was in charge at the time, came sort of galloping over and it was live TV. And it was just the sort of night that, the sort of live television that, impossible to repeat in any other sort of theatre apart from football, in my view.
In the book, there are a lot of football anecdotes. Tell the listeners about your friend John Hunt, who was on a family holiday in France. You, of course, are a Hartlepool nut.
Yeah, well, that was a great... Well, no, it wasn't a great day. It was an absolutely shockingly terrible day. It was the biggest day in Hartlepool's history. We had reached... the playoffs for a place in the championship. And that was, you know, unheard of prospect in the past. And we were playing Sheffield Wednesday at the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff. And I was going down, as was the entire, you know, town, basically. And but my friend John is a boyhood friend and, you know, a sort of adopted Hartlepudlian. He was on a family holiday in France at the time. You know, I mean, I'd driven from London to get to the game. He's on a family holiday in France, and he turned up at the match, which I thought was interesting. They explained what he'd done. You know, he left the Gite to go out, you know, for
a pint of milk,
a loaf of bread, a baguette, and but the boulangerie was left, and he'd turned right to the ferry port. You know, and got the next ferry over to Dover, and then driven from Dover to Cardiff to watch the game before turning back. Look, he did phone his wife en route and said he just...
Did he have the tickets in the glove compartment?
Yeah, he had the tickets with him. And actually, it was about 10 minutes late. He missed about the first 10 minutes of it. It had been sort of an epic voyage, you know. I just wished I could have been a fly on the wall when he got back. You know, because all that way as well, and of course, you know, we were leading 2-1 with 7 minutes to go, 7 minutes from the promised land.
Oh, it's the hope that kills you, Jeff, isn't it?
It is the hope that kills you. And in this case, the referee, because he gave a penalty against us 7 minutes from the end, sent off our centre-half, and that was it. We got to extra time, but we lost in extra time. And poor old John, you know, went back to his understanding wife, Carol.
Was she understanding? The marriage survived, Jeff?
It has survived and flourished. It's probably just as well we've never got to another playoff final.
Well, some of the really funny moments on the programme involve reports from Chris Kamara, or Cammy as he's known. Here's one classic.
Dylan, we're off to Fratton Park where there's been a red card. But for who, Chris Kamara?
I don't know, Jeff, has there? I must have missed that. Red card.
Chris, let me tell you, according to our sources, Anthony van den Boer has been sent off for a second bookable offence. Get your fingers out and count up the number of Portsmouth players who are on the field.
No, you're right, I saw him go off and I thought they were bringing a sub on, Jeff.
That's professionalism, if I can be.
Still nil-nil.
Cutting-edge reports on Gillette Soccer Saturday.
That is just fantastic. Every time I hear or see that, I absolutely crack up.
Yeah, he's a keen observer of the game, isn't he? You can always rely on Cammy to, you know, produce the unexpected. And there are so many. We call them Cammy-propisms as opposed to malapropisms. You know, the ball's just trickled either side of the post. And one of my favourites, he said, it's nil-nil at half-time, Jeff, but it could easily be the other way. You know, you never know with Cammy. Well, you do know with Cammy what you're going to get. You know, you're going to get a lot of fun. It's amazing the way that he has, you know, carved out a career, made himself a legend by being, you know, a sort of roving reporter, really. And he is definitely a one-off. Well, I hope he's a one-off anyway, Lisa.
You couldn't cope with two.
No. One is more than sufficient.
Well, the thing that I'm always aware of when you're watching football is, especially with a bunch of men, the air tends to turn blue a bit. Has any bad language ever slipped out?
You know, not too much, thankfully. I'm the guilty party in that sense. Only once. I didn't actually use the word in question. I just mouthed it, you know, thinking that I was out of vision. It involved Hartlepool again, I'm sorry to say, you know, but we were on a 21-game unbeaten run, so it'll tell you it was quite a few seasons ago. And the last side of beaters were Barnet. And I'd been with the team the night before, and they all said to me, Barnet are the worst side we've played this season. He said, and they beat us, you know? And we were down at their place, and I just knew what was going to happen. You know, it was nil-nil, 81 minutes gone, and the producer said, there's been a goal at Barnet. And generally speaking, when you throw over to the ground and a nice little portrait of the reporter comes up on screen and we are out of vision, nobody can see us. You know, so I was safe in mouthing the word, the curse, that I did, or so I thought, except that on this occasion there was no nice little portrait to cover up my, you know, the oath that came out of my mouth, you know. So I didn't realise, in actual fact, that I'd done it until the following Monday when my boss rang me and said, did you swear on Saturday on the show? I said, no, I don't think so. And eventually we discovered what had happened. And thankfully I had an understanding boss who said, well, look, you know, losing 1-0 at Barnes, he said, understandably you use that sort of language. In fact, he said, I might have used something stronger. So
that's the sort of boss you need, isn't it?
He is absolutely the sort of boss.
You also don't hold back about some aspects of football. All the money at the top of the game and the renaming of football stadia for sponsorship deals. Is it true you refuse to use those names on air?
Yeah, it's just chaotic, isn't it? Because, you know, grounds change names all the time. Knowing the latest example was Huddersfield Town, which was, you know, started life as the McAlpine Stadium, and then it became the Galfarm stadium, and now it's something else. And I, you know, it's insane. I mean, that's quite a difficult situation with somewhere like Huddersfield, because the ground has never had an alternative name, you know, a historical name, if you like, such as St. James's Park.
Yeah.
Now you will never get me calling St. James's Park anything other than St. James's Park, because that's what it is.
It's not the Sports Direct Stadium.
It's part of the club heritage, you know? And to me, you might own the club, but you don't own the heritage. And you know, that's one of the principal reasons why, you know, in those circumstances, I won't use the name. Sometimes, if it's a new ground, you know, you've got no choice because... I mean, the Emirates, that's what it's always been. It's always been the Emirates.
For me, you are, without a doubt, the best broadcaster, bar none, you know, to do that sort of a show, to be live, to have somebody in your ear for hours on end telling you that something's happened at a ground in some far-flung corner of the country. It's amazing to watch, and you make it look so effortless.
I'm blushing. You know, well, I've had a lot of practice at it now, because I've been doing it for a long time, you know. The way I treated Lisa is, I mean, first of all, you prepare for it, because, you know, there's a massive amount of preparation that goes into it, not just from me, but from the other guys on the team as well. But if you prepare, you give yourself half a chance. The second thing is, you know, it doesn't seem like work to me, you know. It's pleasure in a way. I mean, if I wasn't presenting the show, I'd be watching it. I just look at myself and think, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I've got the best job in the world, in the business, bar none.
Jeff Stelling, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Lisa.
Thank you, and good luck with the book.
Thanks, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Thanks.